You want to go on then to thinking about changes during the French Wars and so on. Well, I think the basic facts for the army remain fairly constant. When the British go to war with France in the early months of 1793, they are perfectly prepared to cooperate with the German powers who are fighting France, fighting the Republic. But they're not going to put in large numbers of men. So we're talking 10, 15,000, that kind of number, going off to what today is Belgium, Holland, to fight with the Prussians and with the Habsburg monarchy. And they're the people who are going to provide the mass of military power. But the dramatic things that happen in 1793 are that the French galvanise popular participation in their own armies to defend the French Republic against the German powers. So in a sense, the Prussians and the Austrians do not gain the easy wins that they'd expected in 1792. And they basically get bogged down in what is today sort of Belgium, that area there, which was ruled in those days by the Habsburgs, by the Austrians. The British are involved in fighting there, but on a very small scale. And to cut a long story short, what really happens is that both the British on their side and the German powers on their side get distracted from fighting France. It's a classic problem of defining your strategy. What is your objective? And instead of putting all your efforts into defeating the French, crushing the French Republic, they get distracted by other things because they don't find it an easy task to defeat the French when the French government rallies manpower with the cry, you know, defend our sovereignty, defend the revolution, defend the republic. To put it simply, what happens is the German powers, the Prussians and the Habsburg monarchy, get deflected to the east, where they become involved in the partitioning of Poland, which was a great country in the early 18th century. And in 1793 and 1795, they, together with the Russians, carve up Poland, where they make huge land grabs. And so their administrative and political energies, if you like, and some of their military resources go eastwards. They don't focus entirely on France in 1793 to 1795. So the French have a bit of a breathing space. But the British, who again, you know, the fighting doesn't go well in what we now call Belgium in 1793-94, the British themselves also get distracted, but to the west, where they think easy pickings can be made in the West Indies, grabbing French islands. So the British send small but significant forces to the West Indies in 1793-4, and they keep on sending men out to the West Indies to grab the Sugar Islands, the rich, economically very attractive West Indian possessions of France. And that continues to happen through the 1790s to about 96, 97. They lose a lot of men in the West Indies through disease. And if you take together military forces, naval forces, merchant seamen who die from disease in the West Indies, you're talking in the 1790s of probably about 70,000 men who die there, who are in the British services of some kind or the other. So by British standards, it's a huge loss. But of course, the gain is allegedly going to be the prosperity of the British sugar importing and more general importing economy in the 1790s. So in a way, the British effort is sincere in 1793. There is disillusionment because the Austrians and the Prussians get distracted eastwards. And the British themselves are in a way quite happy to be distracted westwards to the West Indies. And that's the kind of strategy. So for the rest of the war, in fact, I mean, the British are in the war until 1801, and then they go back to war with France in 1803 to 1814. The British very rarely and only very briefly play a part in working with the German powers to defeat France in Flanders. Their military effort is always on the periphery, except in 1799, when they do put an army again very briefly into Flanders, into what is today Belgium. And that again is a failure in 1799. Okay, that's the shape of what's going on. Now, that does not mean to say the British can't raise a lot of troops when needed. For example, when there's a rebellion in Ireland in 1798, the British are able to put nearly 100,000 men in arms into Ireland. But of course, those are militia raised within Ireland itself among the Protestant minority and militia who volunteer to serve in Ireland from Scotland and England and Wales, plus regulars. So the British are able to mobilise forces when there is a domestic, if you like, emergency. an emergency within the United Kingdom. And similarly, when there's an invasion threat from France in 1803 to 1805, when war returns, the British government is able to mobilise a lot of troops, again, volunteers and militia, for the defence of the country. So in that sense, Britain has a capacity. But when we talk about overseas activity, then there are troops in the colonies, there are troops in India, but there is no great military effort on the continent of Europe until 1808. Now, the effort in 1808, which lasts until January 1809, and then is resumed again in the spring of 1809 to 1814, is of course directed to Portugal and Spain. And that effort is, in a sense, geared to trying to keep Portugal out of the hands of the French and then trying to overthrow the French regime established in Spain in 1808. And it's triggered in a way by a revolt in Spain against French rule. So the British there are going into part of Europe which is not central, which is not central to French interests or to the running of the French economy and to French ambitions. It's a peripheral part of Napoleon's territorial ambition, if you like. But it's helped by the fact that the people within Spain are revolting against this imposed French rule. And the British insert an army there, well, in Portugal, to drive the French out of Portugal in 1808. They go into Spain early 1809, are defeated, forced out in January 1809, and then they go back later in the spring of 1809 and stay there for 5 years. But again, it's not a big army. Probably there are about, by the 1810, 1811, about 40,000 British troops in the peninsula. But they stay at it and they galvanize local support. They form an army of Portuguese troops and they, of course, cooperate with Spanish forces who are in rebellion against French rule in Spain. And this is a long, long drawn out campaign, which, of course, eventually is successful in the spring of 1814. But again, the emphasis I want to place on this is there is no large British military activity on the continent of Europe.